Hi gang, thanks for downloading this classic episode of News Fighters. Just a reminder, if you're looking for new original episodes of News Fighters, they're now over on the Irrational Fear podcast feed. So search for Irrational Fear on your podcasting app or go to irrationalfear.com for all new episodes of News Fighters. In the meantime, enjoy this classic News Fighters episode.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Sans Pants Radio. Australia's most cowardly podcast network.
This is News Fighters, where we fight the news so you don't have to.
With Dylan Behan.
Yes, g'day everyone. Welcome to News Fighters for today, October the 1st, 2021. News Fighters is a comedic look at the big stories of the week in Australian news, media and politics, presented by me, Dylan Bain, the La Palma volcano of wacky clips. News Fighters, we do things a bit differently here. Yes, coming up in today's show, we're talking all about the German election results and Berliners voting to sack their landlords with Joel Dulroy from Deutsche Welle and the Berlin podcast Radio Spaltkopf.
Yeah, it kind of feels like everybody lost just a little bit. No one's really come out as a winner here. It's a bit of a compromise all round, so.
But first, it's roadmap time in the latest installment of
Delta Farce.
People have been going through a really horrific time, and I couldn't feel prouder of that.
Yes, here in New South Wales, we're currently bogged down in our fourth month of lockdown, but thankfully, here comes the roadside assist with a roadmap out of this godforsaken mess.
Tonight, the date is set. New South Wales to start reopening on the 11th of October, and more freedoms that follow soon afterwards.
Sport, weddings, dancing, drinking, even just leaving your own LGA. Life begins at 80.
Yes, coincidentally, Life Begins at 80 is also going to be Joe Biden's re-election campaign slogan. So yes, Freedom Day is coming in 3 stages from October 11. Just don't call it Freedom Day.
I'm not someone who's going to call 11th of October Freedom Day.
But from her deputy,
Freedom Day is only a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, those grabs from Berejiklian and Nationals leader John Barilaro there really seem to sum up the Liberal National Coalition well. Don't call it Freedom Day. I will. Okay. It's a bit like also how they handle the environment. We need to do net zero by 2050. No, you don't. Okay. There was one element of the reopening roadmap that the news media seemed particularly fixated on, though. See if you can spot it.
Tonight, our journey back to freedom. Holidays, friends visiting, even standing up with a beer in the pub.
10 people will be allowed to visit a home. You can stand up and have a drink at the pub.
And people will be able to stand up and drink at hospitality venues.
Coming soon to bars, standing while drinking.
Standing up to drink will be allowed inside.
And indoors at the pub, you can stand while drinking.
Yes, no more sitting down and drinking for me like a complete loser guy. That's right, soon we'll be able to have vertical consumption of alcoholic beverages, like real Australians. One catch, though, you will have to be double vaccinated.
If you want to go to a restaurant, pub or hairdresser, when we come out of lockdown on October 11, you'll have to show proof of vaccination.
But it turns out unvaccinated drinkers may have found one loophole.
The only exception to the roadmap, places of worship. They'll be allowed to welcome unvaccinated people in from the 80% mark.
Places of worship have rules of their own, and the unvaccinated will be welcome.
Yes, hope you like that Jesus wine in those little cups. Yes, New South Wales is opening up in stages, first of all, just to the vaccinated, but Who's going to be policing who's vaccinated at venues?
Sydney business owners are on notice. It's their job to police the vaccination status of their customers when the city reopens in 13 days' time.
Yes, that's right. Employees could be forced to confront unvaccinated people, which will make it very hard for them to follow that customer is always right mantra they've had drilled into them. Bit hard to do that when Karen at the front desk is yelling theories about their sovereign citizen rights and being injected with Bill Gates' 5G tracking chips. Yeah, customers not always right. Customers sometimes a little bit crazy. Not surprisingly, the concerns of businesses who are scared about having to police this. Don't worry, Premier Gladys Berejiklian, who clearly hasn't worked in retail in a very long time.
People asked me yesterday, aren't you worried about people having conflicts at businesses or otherwise when the unvaccinated try to get in? But 9 out of 10 of us are already vaccinated in New South Wales. 9 out of 10 adults are already vaccinated in New, or close to. That is huge.
Oh, my God. Look, if 1 out of every 10 of your customers is an anti-vaxxer Karen that you have to reason and argue with, no business can be expected to function very well at all. It's a bit like if 1 in 10 of your customers was a shoplifter or a pyromaniac. Makes it very difficult to run an efficient business. But then came some good news for businesses. Rest assured, you won't even get fined if you let in unvaccinated people, and in fact, you're not even expected to check people's vaccination statuses at all.
The Health Minister has revealed businesses who breach customer vaccination requirements aren't likely to face fines.
At this stage, that's not part of the public health orders.
After the Health Minister revealed yesterday businesses wouldn't be fined for letting unvaccinated people in, the Premier today revealed some won't need to check.
For a very large venue with hundreds of people in there, we would expect a staff member to be checking that as people come in. But for very small premises, that expectation is less.
Okay, right. So if businesses don't have to police vaccination status, surely the police will police it, right?
Businesses are unlikely to be penalised if they can't prevent unvaccinated customers entering their premises. The Health Minister says the focus will be on big fines for individuals who break the rules. And police say they won't be checking the vaccination status of patrons when the lockdown ends in 2 weeks.
New South Wales police won't be walking through hotels, pubs, cafes, restaurants and demanding people show any sort of vaccination passport.
All right, so in summary, to start reopening safely, we have to do it at a 70% vaccination rate only to fully vaccinated people. But nobody has to check who's fully vaccinated, and businesses won't be fined if they serve people who aren't vaccinated, providing zero incentive for the health orders to be followed and for the reopening to happen safely. Good job, everyone. And also, why are the New South Wales police shy now? They've been caught strip searching teenagers at music festivals, but all of a sudden they're not going to look on people's phones to check their vaccination status? Give me a break. It's a bit like the roads minister coming out and announcing the speed limit on a new freeway is 100 kilometres an hour. Wink, wink. But don't worry, says the Premier, some people will get fined.
Anybody who flagrantly does the wrong thing will be fined. Anybody who flagrantly disregards the health orders will be penalised. I want to make that very clear.
Right, so I feel like if you're unvaccinated and you sneak into the pub, that'll be fine. But if you start, like, flagrantly yelling, I'm unvaccinated, check it out, dudes, then maybe you'll get a fine. So if police and businesses aren't responsible for ensuring unvaccinated people don't enter venues, who is?
As was the case before Delta, there is a very obvious onus on the individual to make sure they do the right thing. But we just ask that everybody respect the rules, and individuals also have a responsibility to step up and do the right thing. For businesses, the onus is on individuals, because the onus will be on individuals to prove their vaccination. But okay. The onus has always been mainly on the individual.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, if you trust everyone to do the right thing all the time, then why do you have speed cameras, red light cameras, and train ticket inspectors? Last time I checked, I can't kill your immunocompromised grandma if I accidentally buy a concession train ticket, but I sure as hell will get fined for it because train ticket inspectors are everywhere. All right, looking at the roadmap, the first two stages of opening up are for fully vaccinated people, and they're when we reach 70% double dose on the 11th of October and 80% on the 18th of October. But then on December 1st, Unvaccinated people won't have to sneak into shops anymore.
No jab, no worries. The unvaccinated will be welcomed back to restriction-free life just after the rest of us.
The final phase is December 1, and this involves all New South Wales residents, regardless of vaccine status. There is no limit in your home, no limit outdoors. All retail moves to 1 per 2 square metres, and nightclubs reopen.
Okay, so for listeners in Sydney, a nightclub is like a pub where DJs play music and people dance. We used to have a lot of them before the lockout laws. You might want to ask your parents. Yeah, so Gladys seemed to think that somehow giving unvaccinated people all the same rights as everyone else a few weeks before Christmas would actually encourage them to get the jab.
I think today is a very disappointing day for those who aren't vaccinated. I think they assumed that once we hit 80% double dose that they would have certain freedoms. They'll have to wait at least 4 or 5 weeks after we hit 80% double dose. The message is, if you want to be able to have a meal with friends, if you want to welcome people into your home, you have to get vaccinated. That's a simple message. And if you don't, if you choose not to, that's okay, but you'll have to wait a long time.
4 or 5 weeks after we've been locked down for like 4 months isn't that long. And by the way, the message here to anti-vaxxers couldn't be less subtle.
And if you don't, if you choose not to, that's okay.
Yeah, putting everyone else in the community at risk while clogging up the health system because of something you saw on YouTube.
That's okay.
Meanwhile, in Victoria, Dictator Dan isn't having any of it.
Premier Daniel Andrews has no plans to follow the lead of New South Wales and ease restrictions for unvaccinated people at the beginning of December.
I'm not going to be saying to people, I'll just wait 5 weeks and you'll be able to have all the freedoms. No, that's not a guarantee at all here. But we will have people locked out of venues and events like the Boxing Day test if they haven't had 2 jabs.
And absolutely gobsmacking was the fact that Gladys claimed her policy was better than a lot of other countries.
Unlike most places in the world, if you're not vaccinated, you'll have to wait at least 4 or 5 weeks after we've already hit the 80% double dose rate. In most other places in the world, the rate is lower, but people have to wait less if they're not vaccinated.
And this is just not true, because in the last few months, a lot of highly vaccinated countries like Canada, Singapore, Germany, and Israel are actually making everyday life harder for people who choose not to get vaccinated. In Canada, despite having over 90% of over 12s fully vaccinated, the province of Quebec has just instituted vaccine passports to try and prevent a fourth Delta wave overwhelming hospitals.
This is part of a new reality for Quebecers, showing proof of vaccination to sit in a cafe. The vaccine passport now applies to non-essential services like restaurants, bars, gyms, movie theaters and festivals for anyone over 12.
And in Ontario, Canada's version of Gladys Berejiklian, Doug Ford, the most pro-business idiot you can imagine who totally botched the third alpha wave last winter, has also announced vaccine passports for that province.
Vaccinations will be mandatory for certain indoor settings where the risk of transmission is highest because of masks aren't always worn, including restaurants, bars, and casinos, among others. Enforcement will be led by bylaw officers. The policy will not apply to outdoor spaces where we know the risk of spreading COVID is low.
And if you like, well, we're heading into winter and we're heading into summer, well, closer to home in Singapore, which never has a winter because it's directly under the equator, they have over 80% of over 12s vaccinated, and they're reimposing restrictions, even on vaccinated people.
Among the tightened measures in place from Monday, group sizes for dining in will be reduced to 2 people. There will also be a 2-person cap on social gatherings and unique household visitors per day.
And even vaccinated individuals can still carry the virus and transmit to others. Therefore, it is best that unvaccinated individuals minimize their potential exposure to the virus at big events and at higher risk settings such as restaurants, gyms, and fitness studios.
Yeah, that's the Singapore Health Minister there reminding us that vaccine passports aren't about making a two-tier society or stopping people from having fun. They're actually about stopping people from getting COVID and dying. Anyways, in conclusion, if unvaccinated people are going to be going to my gym this summer, then I won't be. Partially because I'm lazy and don't want to go to the gym, but also, I don't want to catch COVID off someone who's unvaccinated and then get sick and be stuck at home for 2 weeks. But also, I don't want to give COVID to someone who's unvaccinated and then they potentially get sick and die. Mind you, according to Gladys,
that's okay.
Hold up.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
All right, joining me now on Newsfighters, live from Berlin, it's Joel Dalroy from Deutsche Welle and the great Berlin News podcast in English, Radio Spätkopf. Joel, how are you going this morning?
I'm a little tired. It's about 4 a.m. here, but I'm surviving on caffeine.
And turning to the federal, I guess you call it the federal German election, in terms of the winners and losers from the results, it doesn't really appear as though anyone's really cleaned up there.
Germany's centre-left Social Democrats have edged into the lead in the national election there.
Germany's general election has resulted in a virtual gridlock.
But it could be weeks or even months until a new chancellor is declared.
Yeah, it kind of feels like everybody lost just a little bit. No one's really come out as a winner here. It's a bit of a compromise all round, so they're going to have to spend long time trying to pull together a coalition, probably with the SPD, the Greens, maybe another small party. But you can never count out the idea that the CDU could still be in there again. But yeah, it's going to take a while. The last time they did this, it took like 5 months before Germany had a coalition. So, you know, we haven't seen the end of Angela Merkel just yet. She's going to be around for a bit longer.
Yeah, she'll be in caretaker mode. Yes, so her party, the Christian Democrats, their vote's down down quite a bit. The Social Democrats, who are more the left-wing party under Olaf Scholz, are up quite a bit, and it's looking like he could be the next chancellor. Yeah, is that more than likely?
That's how it's looking at the moment, but he's got to convince the other parties to come along with him. And, you know, they're all going to want a policy here or there, so it's going to take a while. Although, you know, I've lived in Germany now for 13 years, and I really like this idea of coalition government where they, you know, actually have to try and compromise on things, you know, like adults, not just, you know, try and get everything they want or walk out of the room.
Yeah, it's not that winner takes all thing. And two of the parties it's looking like they're going to have to talk to are the Greens, whose vote is up quite a lot. But then there's this kind of liberal economic free market party, the Free Democrats. And I understand the Greens and the Free Democrats are talking together already. What are they going to agree on? It sounds like one wants more green energy, one wants more taxes. How are they, any idea what this could mean policy-wise?
It's a complete mystery, and that's what everyone's scratching their heads about at the moment. The Greens, they want to be able to regulate their way out of the climate crisis, and the FDP want to leave it up to the market and don't want any new taxes. So it's really hard to see how they're going to come together. But, you know, if they want to form a government, they're going to have to try and compromise at some point. But yeah, look, the German politics, it's always a compromise situation, and nobody ever really gets everything that they want.
If it is looking like the more left-wing parties will form the coalition with the Social Democrats and the Greens, any idea what that'll mean policy-wise? Will there be any big changes in policy direction for Germany?
Well, we have to expect that there's going to be more action on climate change because it hasn't been enough. But, I mean, Germany's got other big issues here. I don't know if you've heard, but if you take a train anywhere in the middle of the country, it's really hard to get Wi-Fi, even on, like, the best trains going through areas that you think it would be possible to get a wireless connection. Your phone just drops out. The digital infrastructure here is just decades behind, and they haven't kept up. And so that really needs to be addressed if Germany's going to keep up with the rest of the world. We also got this huge reliance here on the car industry. It props up so many jobs, and politicians are just loath to touch it because they don't want to annoy the unions, they don't want to annoy the workers, they don't want to take away jobs. But those jobs are going to disappear anyway once the electric car revolution gets going, and Germany hasn't done enough to make sure that its car companies are electrified as well. So a lot of catching up there to do as well.
And any ideas in terms of foreign policy? Like Australia, Germany relies a lot on trade with China. So I guess that means no party will want to kind of try and isolate China the way it seems like Australia and America and the UK are ganging up on them right now, yeah?
Yeah, Germany tries to get along pretty well with China, to say. I think it's the biggest export partner now. They sell a lot of cars there, and they don't really want to piss them off that much. So Germany is not as bellicose against China as other countries are.
And in terms of the campaign itself, I guess if everyone's potentially looking at forming partnerships with everyone must be a very polite election campaign. No insults at the debates or anything, I assume.
Not direct personal insults. And frankly, the main candidate for the Conservatives, Armin Laschet, he did enough by himself without anyone having to insult him to not come across looking like a bit of a fool. Made gas all over the place.
He was famously laughing at the flood event, which was a lot of people were angry about.
Laschet was once the front runner to succeed Angela Merkel as Chancellor. But after he was caught laughing while the president was speaking in a flood hit village, his polling took a hit.
Yep, and then he did an interview with some children on like children's television, and these little kids, they basically tore into him. Very well researched. Everyone suspects that they had earpieces in when they were asking him the questions, but he couldn't even answer a simple question like, what would you call your pet dragon? You know, this is a guy who really sort of fudged his way and bungled the election. So no one really needed to insult him. He did a pretty good job of that himself.
And what can we expect from Olaf Scholz? I think it'll be very weird for the world to have a guy named Olaf at the G7. But what can we expect from him personally if he does become chancellor?
Well, he's pretty boring. That's pretty much why he won.
He was the finance minister, right? Yeah.
He was the finance minister, and he was also a state leader from Hamburg before that. But he does have actually a few interesting potential skeletons in his closet. As a finance minister, there were a few scandals going on here in Germany relating to banking, some really big banking companies that were proven to be completely fraudulent. And there's some suggestion that he might have known a little bit in advance or known more about what was going on than he is he's let on so far. So, he does seem boring, but, you know, there could be a little bit of interest if he does get in power and people start digging a little bit more into his personal phone and email records to see what he knew when about these scandals.
Is it a bit like if Peter Costello or Wayne Swan somehow became prime minister?
That's a pretty good equivalent, yeah. But, yeah, right. In this case, one of the reasons that he's done so well is because, well, Angela Merkel herself was pretty boring, and it seems like Germans just like a kind of, you know, middle-of-the-road, sensible person who doesn't look too flashy and just gets the job done.
Mm. And speaking of Angela Merkel, she's been chancellor since we had John Howard as prime minister. And I don't know, in the West, all the media coverage has been that Germany's going to miss her and the world's going to miss her. How true is that? Are young people going to miss her? People just find her kind of boring and ubiquitous at this stage? Or will people actually miss her as chancellor?
Older people are going to miss her as chancellor. And you can see that because the CDU lost tons of votes and they all went to the SPD. And the suspicion there is that's the Merkel vote. Those people were traditional SPD voters before, but they liked her because she was middle of the road, and she basically stole a lot of the SPD's policies and included them in her own. And so she brought those people along, and now she's gone, and they've gone elsewhere. But young people are actually quite angry at Merkel and politics in general for just not doing enough about climate change and just letting their futures be stolen. So there's going to be a lot of young people who, not in a hateful way, but they're happy that Merkel is the era of Merkel is over, and that something new can begin where these policies, these problems can actually start being taken seriously.
And speaking of young people voting on interesting things, there was this, it's got a bit of coverage over here. So Berlin voted yes on property expropriation to reclaim housing from giant real estate companies. Could this actually happen, or is this just, what's the vote about?
Well, I live in Berlin and I cover mostly local Berlin politics. And this is really one of the most exciting ideas that we've had in ages. So the referendum basically called for the city government to forcibly purchase hundreds of thousands of apartments from private landlords, but only those big private companies that own more than 3,000 apartments. So it was really specifically targeting these huge companies that just own swathes of property.
Right. That are for-profit, I assume.
Yeah, definitely
big for-profit.
So you got to keep in mind, Berlin is a city of renters. There's a huge number of people rent here. We're up to 85% of the city are renters rather than owner-occupiers. And so everybody here is interested and worried about rent prices going up. And these big companies have huge influence, and they have been putting the rents up for ages. And everyone's been getting angry about it. The city's tried to do various things by capping the rents over the last few years. It hasn't really worked. And then there's been these big protests, which accumulated in this referendum. At first, nobody thought it would get anywhere because it's just too radical. I mean, the idea, it's like, you know, we're 30 years here after the end of socialism in East Germany, and we've got the citizens of the city who have basically now, the overwhelming majority have told the city government, we want you to forcibly purchase property back from the market and put it in state hands, you know. What happens now? Well, it's actually not a binding referendum, so the politicians can ignore it if they want to. But it's pretty hard to ignore a referendum where more than 56% of the people said they want this to happen. You know, a million Berliners voted in favor of this. So they're going to have to find some way to fudge around it if they don't want to actually do it. Because if they did do it, there's one estimate that it would cost something like 36 billion euros to actually pay out these companies to get their properties back. Even though the supporters of the initiative say that the state has the permission to do it for much cheaper, using the constitution, they could actually pay out a lot less if it's in the public interest. But the problem actually is that the main party that has won the city state election, which is also the SPD, they're against it, and their mayor doesn't want to do it. And it's making the process of forming a coalition to govern here on a local level also very difficult. It's putting the Greens and the Left Party against the SPD. And so the image that Berlin has had recently of this sort of lefty greeny city that's has a really progressive politics, that could actually change a bit after this latest election. And because of this particular referendum, which might split these parties apart because they all have such a different take on whether we should actually go ahead and do this.
So the idea will be that it'll be like compulsory acquisition here when they buy land for a train station or something. It'll be owned by the state. So that the Berlin is actually like their housing run by the state.
Yeah, well, public housing here is not a negative thing. It's not. It's not like a housing commission run down flats. It's good quality housing, and it's affordable, and it stays affordable. You don't have to worry about getting kicked out of your flat without notice, which can happen when you've got a private landlord. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about insane rent increases. Your rent might go up a little bit, but it's just a safe, affordable way to live. And it's got a very different image here than in other countries, that's for sure. Here, if you get into a city-owned housing apartment, you consider yourself lucky.
Wow. Well, I think I know why so many Aussies are moving to Berlin then, if it's affordable housing.
Affordable, if they can find somewhere to live, it's very hard to actually get a flat. And that's the other problem. They certainly need to build more apartments.
And just finally, to COVID, before we go, we're about to open up here in a few weeks. What are the lessons from Germany? Here they're saying that from December 1st in New South Wales, unvaccinated people will be allowed anywhere and everywhere. But I understand you guys are leaning the other way. Is that correct?
Oh, no, we're opening up here too. We have been for a while now. Our vaccination rates are doing pretty well. And we can start going to nightclubs. Next week, the famous Berghain nightclub reopens business as usual. You can go in if you're vaccinated and can dance without a mask. So
are there different tiers for if you're vaccinated or not vaccinated? Like unvaccinated people have to stay outside or something? Or is it
exactly? It's getting harder and harder to do anything if you're not vaccinated anymore. It's almost impossible to be able to sit inside a restaurant, to go inside a nightclub, to go to a cinema. You have to stay outside and wave your protest banners out saying whatever it is you think your freedoms have been removed because you're not vaccinated. But look, it's working here. The hospital rates are down, the infection rates are down, and people are getting on with their lives, and we're all quite happy about it, to be honest.
Terrific. Well, all the best, and Olaf says we should have the final Chancellor results by Christmas, which, fingers crossed, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's great talking to you, and we'll see. We may have by Christmas. Last time it took longer than that, but
wow,
you know, if you like the side of Angela Merkel, you can be happy she's around for a few more weeks at least.
Well, certainly a lot better than in Australia, where it's just whoever Rupert Murdoch decides, that's for sure. Where can people find you and Radio Spätkopf?
Well, Radio Spätkopf, we are Berlin's English news podcast. We do a show about once a month. If you've ever visited Berlin and you want to know what's going on here, we keep you updated about trams and U-Bahns and bicycles and parks and parties and all the fun stuff, and the politics as well. So just search for us on your podcast feed. Now, Spätkopf is spelled S-P-A-E-T. It's got a funny umlaut. A Spätkopf is like a kiosk. It's a bottle shop, the corner store. You go, the place you go to get your beer,
get your
and
your chewing
gum and whatever else.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a place everyone has to go at least once a day. And so it's a very local place, and that's why we named the show Radio Spätkopf. We like the idea that we might be something playing in the background of your local Spätkopf.
Terrific. All right, thanks again for being on the show, Joel Dalroy. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening. That's News Fighters for today, the 1st of October, 2021. News Fighters, as always, is written, produced, and edited by me, Wacky Clips Boy, Dylan Bain, for Sans Pants Radio. Oh, and a big thank you to Joel from Radio Spätkopf for being on the show. To support the show, we're on Apple Podcasts, pay to subscribe, or on our Patreon, patreon.com/newsfighters. Big thank you to Shannon for joining our Patreon this month. I look forward to disappointing you. Hey, and everyone else, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/newsfighters. Also, a reminder, we refuse to advertise on Facebook, so sign up for our free newsletter at newsfighters.com. Hit subscribe or follow on your podcasting app. Also, we're on Twitter and Instagram at newsfighterspod. I might take next week off. I'm pretty exhausted. We'll see how we go. Anyways, here it is. Your whiff of pine.
I've been to Gallipoli. I found my uncle's grave. Just by mistake, actually. It's funny.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.